When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, welcome to Your Mom is a Podcast. My name is Milana Weintraub.
I'm Sandeep Parikh.
We are old friends, fools.
Old.
And both.
Fools.
Parents. Sandeep has a five-year-old. I have a three-year-old. We're figuring this thing out. And so in an attempt to do so, we are talking to people who are extraordinary in one way or another, often in many ways. And then talking to their mom or dad or anyone who's responsible for getting them that way to try to figure out how we can do a better job at this parenting thing.
That's right. And we're solving it. We're going to find the code.
Yeah.
Right?
We are solving parenthood tonight. That's our new tagline. Figuring it out once and for all. You won't need any of those millions of books on parenting now that you have this one podcast.
I love it. This is an exciting episode. But hey, to do our little check-in, can I check in about first day at school?
Please.
Big day. So my little dude has first day at school. Now, he did go to a school before this, but it was a forest school. And it was like, he was like, you know, an elf that lived in nature.
Just roll around in the dirt and they're like A plus.
They're no grades, of course.
Of course not.
Everything's an A plus.
Everything is just stones.
Yeah.
Good job. You collected this crystal today.
That's right. You built a dam in the stream. Well done. But now he went to his first kind of walled school, I guess we're calling it this morning. So it felt more like how it was when I was growing up. I related to it, that moment of like, you know, walking in with the backpack and walking down the sidewalk and going in with your parents and going into a classroom. And just, it was really cool. He was so excited. He got his chest up and out and he was like, kind of just walking in with all this confidence. It was really, the school did it really well where like last night we had this like parent potluck thing the day before school. And then we got to visit the classrooms and he got to see like exactly where he was going to be sitting. Like literally they had a picture of him on the little like lily pad that he was going to sit on. So I think that going in today, it made it that much easier for him to just go. He like walked in, he knew exactly where to go. He like sat on his lily pad and he was like, I'm ready to go. It's a big moment seeing your little dude or like jumping into the system.
Because you excelled so much educationally, you went to Brown afterwards and you really loved school in that way.
Which Brown is like the forest school for
Ivy League
colleges.
But
I was unschooled at Brown.
I wonder if you have a more positive association with those kind of walled schools. Like when I walk through anything with lockers in it, I have a deep sense of
dread.
Anxiety and dread when I hear somebody talking about an algebraic formula or anything that has to do with a chemical compound. I'm like, get me the fuck out of here quick. I can't. I'm so, so anxious around it. And so
it's like a trauma response.
Yeah. It's an immediate trauma response. And also now as an adult, many years later, I'm like, wow, all of that was inapplicable to my life. Even just recently, I tried to like buy something where I'm like, okay, so 1 ounce is $100. 1.7 ounces is this. Am I getting a deal if I get the bigger, you know? And then I was like, it took me so long to do it. I kind of figured it out, but more so based on like logic than any kind of formula that I learned.
No, but you were solving for X. You were solving for X.
Exactly. But I didn't know how to put it in a formula. I just knew how to do it logically. And then ultimately I checked my answer on ChatGPT.
Yes, that's what you learned, is to just check AI. And so, that's all they're going to learn now.
Well, that's what I'm wondering now is like how much is education going to change with this new technology? But I do think one of the things that I really love about the way you parent is that you really prioritize social, emotional education and
correct
and relationships, dealing with other kids. You know, one of the things that I find really magical about, you know, seeing my kid expand is that when he's with other kids, he's not only happier, he's also growing so much after a weekend of spending time with kids.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm really excited about for school for him now. And who knows, he might be the kid that like loves algebraic formulas and loves chemical compounds. And there's no way to know until I expose him to that.
But can he love that intrinsically because he loves that, as opposed to like, I'm going to get a good grade if I love this, right? Or do this, right? Like that's my question. And that's why we actually ultimately chose this sort of progressive schooling format, was that they don't do grades until I think middle school or high school or something like that. No screens, no, like, it's like, it's very like about social emotional education and being a good person, citizen, and learning not to spit in each other. like just learning how to be, in community. And like prioritizing that over the educational stuff and letting that stuff come, because it just does, like, based upon your own curiosity. Like, he's already kind of quote unquote reading because he is curious about what we are reading. That is what is driving him, not like, hey, you better learn this now, right? Otherwise you're going to be in the lower group, not the upper group.
Yeah, which was huge part of my motivation. Educational motivation was so shame-based. And who knows what it would have been like. I could have been an author.
I'm excited to see. Like, I was having a conversation with the headmaster of the school about this concept of not being outcome-based and really being process-based and being like finding love in the process and making the goal being like loving the process, not the like, what am I going to get out of it? Am I going to get into Harvard or whatever? Like let that not be the goal. Let the goal be in the living.
That seems like a great thing that we should be modeling for them. Like, for example, I have an office.
I'm so
that's
bad at that.
Exactly. Me too. I have an office that's outside of my house to go to do work because I can't work because I have a 3-year-old in the house. It's impossible. So I leave. And I was like, oh, well, I should be painting more. I really love painting. It fills me up. I'll bring an easel to the office. And then I was like, no, if I'm going to be doing anything like that, I should be doing it in front of him for that same reason, teaching the love of doing something or just modeling it. And often...
Maybe you should have an easel in both places. Because I mean,
I could have six easels.
Have
it's
so
fine.
Many easels.
I could have an easel in the car, one in my backpack.
We're such dorks. Make the same joke at the same time. Yeah, have one in your car. Like, officer, were you looking at your cell phone? No, I was doing this painting.
No, I was finishing this elaborate oil painting. It's a landscape. I was painting the freeway.
Well, hey, look.
We have a really exciting guest today.
Yeah, we do.
And we should jump in.
So thank you for listening to Your Mama's Podcast. Be sure to give us a rating where you listen to podcasts. Connect with us on Instagram or TikTok. Connect with us, other fans, fun kind. We got all that stuff going on. So follow us at Your Mom is a Podcast. But now we're going to move to the guest portion where we're going to hang out with Amy Devarania and her mom.
Can't wait. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
I think this is the first time we're doing an interview where the person we're interviewing is in the same house as their mom right now.
Yeah, right now. She offered to watch my son while he's out of camp.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yes. Let's see how good she is, because he might come crawling in here.
How old is your son?
He is 6.
Oh, that's great. He might just it's prime interrupting age.
Absolutely. It's been like that since COVID started.
He might be
started.
Joining us in the episode. It'll be a multi-generational episode.
I don't think I'll be able to handle it. Amy's voice is too cute. If there's a littler version, that might make my head explode.
I don't even know what to do. Yeah.
He is very cute. And the problem is he knows it. So he uses it to his advantage.
Right.
So do I. There you go. That's how I get by. Yeah, I'm just like, I'm adorable. Everyone knows this, right? How do I get what I want? And Sandeep does it all the time too.
What? I do? Come
what?
On.
Who, me?
Please go on. Let's talk about my cuteness. No, let's talk about Amy.
Okay.
Amy Devaranya is the founder of and the CEO of Uva. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Spelled OOVA, a company dedicated to improving women's health through science and technology, mainly by making home testing products for fertility, perimenopause, and hormone therapy.
Yeah, under Amy's leadership, Uva's technology has been awarded several high-profile accolades, including the CES Innovation Award in 2021. That is huge. That's awesome. And being named a finalist in Fast Company's World Changing Ideas in 2024.
Also, no easy feat.
No, I don't know if you know this, but you have a PhD in biomedical sciences from the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Did I say all those words right?
That was all correct, yeah.
Great. She began her career as a data scientist in the industry supporting disease areas, including inflammation, virology, and oncology.
And this November, Amy is running the New York City Marathon, the thing that always makes me cry, on behalf of Resolve.org, which is the National Infertility Association and is on the board of Paterna Bioscience, a male infertility company, which is not talked about enough, by the way. Okay. 50% of the equation.
We don't want to talk about it.
We don't want to get it.
That's because we're full of shame and fear.
But we don't want to be blamed for anything. Yep. It's so funny because that's like, we study men so much more than we study women. Yeah. But when it comes to fertility, we're just like, what did the women do wrong? So you are also the mother to a wonderful 6-year-old son.
Who may be on the podcast later.
May visit us. And we are just so excited because we got to talk to your mom, who is hilarious and adorable and sweet.
Signature, loving, funny auntie. And so it was, for me, great. It was a great interview. So I'm really excited to share that.
I don't know how long it's been since you guys spoke with her, but she hasn't talked to me since then.
She hasn't talked to you. I didn't say that. I just said, don't talk about the interview. I didn't say, don't talk to her at all.
She cannot tell a lie. So she's like, it's easier if we don't talk at all rather than me accidentally blurting something out.
Yeah.
I love that she's taking it so seriously though.
She's like, don't ask me any questions. Like, I just said
hi. Any questions?
I just said hello. Like, I'm not.
Quit drilling me. Do you guys live close to each other?
No, she lives in New Jersey. I live in Connecticut. So it's about a 2-hour drive.
That is a long schlep. Yes. But enough that you get each other in each other's lives.
Yes, it's close enough.
It's close enough. It's like a good spot. Like my parents on the other side. My parents on the East Coast, New Hampshire. I'm in California. So there's no like easy ways to ever drop in.
That's a commitment.
It's a commitment. My parents do find ways to do it anyway, but usually got noticed. But like New Jersey to Connecticut, that's drop-in territory. That's like, I can just show up and roll up. That's pretty great.
Yeah, I need you tonight and they could be there.
They could technically be there, yeah.
I kind of have a similar distance with my mom and it's great because it can be very convenient and there is also a boundary.
A separation, yeah.
It's very important.
So tell us
a little
bit. She says
it quietly enough that her mom in the other room can't hear that.
Please don't feel like you have to censor yourself.
Oh, I'm not. She's not here. She's already outside.
Okay, good.
Okay, great. So tell us how you got into this work because it is fascinating. It's something Sandeep's wife is also always working in like fertility health and the health of pregnant women and that kind of work. So we're always talking about it.
Nutrition, really, but yes. Yeah, and totally.
How did you get into this?
So I was at the end of my PhD and my husband and I started trying to have a baby. We knew it wasn't going to happen in the first shot, but nothing could have really prepared us for the devastating journey that we ended up embarking on to have our son.
Real quick, you knew it wasn't going to happen in the first shot? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Because I've always had irregular cycles. And when I was younger, I was misdiagnosed with PCOS. And it was kind of...
That's polycystic ovaries, right?
Yeah, polycystic ovarian syndrome. So it was funny because once I came out, of course, my only job is to give my parents grandchildren, right? So when my cycle was very irregular...
Your sole purpose.
My sole purpose as an Indian woman was to give my mom grandchildren. But because my cycle was so irregular, she took me to an OB and was like, get this checked out, because she thought she was going to have trouble having grandkids. And so
that's such a good way she was going to have trouble having grandkids.
Let's just talk about who's the subject of that sentence, the verb and the direct object. Okay, sorry, go on. But oh, Indian moms.
It's so true though. It was right out of college, and so I was a pre-med. I was obviously like hunkered down in the library for like 4 months just studying. And so I came out of college and I had gained a little bit of weight because I was eating crap for 4 months. I had some adult acne, and I'm sorry, I'm Indian. I didn't get my eyebrows done. So it was a little bit of facial hair. And so the doctor took one look at me and was like, you have PCOS, here's metformin, here's some birth control pills, and sent me on my way. And none of those drugs really like suited me. I became anemic. I got like every side effect off that ISU that's in those drugs. And for somebody who's like very happy and like upbeat, all of a sudden I became very depressed. I had no energy, very lethargic. 3 years go by. I lost the weight. The acne cleared up. I got my eyebrows done. And I went to a new OB, and on my intake form, I said I had PCOS, and she actually had done the blood work and like she did a proper workup. And I remember her walking into the exam room. I was like, you don't have PCOS. Just get off those drugs. You don't need it. Mm. And went on to the next bullet. And I was like, wait a minute. I've been dealing with this for 3 years. And you just flippantly said I don't have it. And I didn't even have any data to have a discussion with her about it, aside from her just saying you don't have it.
You didn't see any of the blood tests or any of the...
Aside from like that, I had no way to be like, but somebody told me that I had this. Why are you telling me I don't? Like, what have I been doing for the past 3 years? Like, all these questions kind of come at you in the parking lot when you leave the office. And I realized, like, as a woman, you really have no control over your health. You're kind of at the mercy of what the doctors are telling you because you don't have that data to be a bit forthcoming with the questions. Right?
Sorry, is it that they don't share the data, or is it not? It's just hard to access? Like, what was the pain point?
The data you truly need is a time series reading of your hormone levels so you understand your hormonal patterns. And that data isn't available because who in their right mind, if they're not going through an IVF cycle or any sort of invasive treatment, is going to go into LabCorp Quest to get blood work done every day?
Okay. And that's what it requires.
That's what it would have required. And I wasn't doing that. And I'm sure most women aren't either. So fast forward like about a decade, and my husband and I are starting to have a baby. We both agreed that we did not want to go down the invasive route or use any sort of clinician to help us get pregnant because of what had happened to me earlier. I just had such a mistrust when it came to the medical community about my fertility. And so we started doing it right, like trying everything naturally. I did everything I was supposed to do, right? And month after month, I was getting a negative pregnancy test after another, and all I really had to show for it was a really solid notebook of all of my symptoms and a bunch of smiley faces and circles. Not even smiley faces, smiley faces and hollow circles, but none of them were like blinking with like the dashes around it saying like, hey, you're fertile or anything like that. I never saw that in my journey. And this was a pretty long process for us. It took us 18 months to conceive my son, but imagine being in the midst of that. And my PhD advisor was like, so what do you want to do with your life? I'll do whatever intro you want. You're about to graduate. I was like, well, I don't want to go back to pharma. I'd like to go to a biotech or startup. And he's like, okay, in what field? And so I'm like, well, do you know anyone that's doing anything in women's health, preferably with hormonal health, to empower women to take control of their lives? And I went on with a bit more detail, what ended up being my very first pitch of UVA. And if you can imagine this like 6'10" guy who has his back to me slowly turning around going, Amy, you need to build that. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. What do I do? And he's like, I have an investor coming tomorrow, put together a pitch deck and I'll put you in front of him. And that kind of became step
tomorrow.
One.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Takes me months to put together a pitch deck. Okay.
You don't even want to know. My first pitch deck was 87 pages long because I had no idea what I was doing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's a novel.
It was a pitch novel. Yes. But he was very nice. He went through it page by page. It was like, you don't need this. You don't need this. And it got dissected down to 7 pages.
Well, it's because you probably tapped into something. That's just like the perfect example of like, it's not about the pitch deck. It's mm-hmm. about the pitch. It's about what you're trying to build and whether that resonates and whether that's meaningful. And in the end, it sounded like that's what mattered. And so people wanted to rally around you to help you build the thing that mattered.
That's exactly what's happened. And I think one of the things I pride myself on is always surrounding myself with people who are much smarter than me, much more capable than me, because you can yeah. only grow.
Well, then why did you come on this podcast?
You made a terrible mistake. This is a grave yeah. error. Well, if you need to go, we understand.
Yeah, we get it. We can stop now.
You're definitely the smartest person in the room. And I think the recipe for success is never be the smartest person in the room. Mm-hmm. So you're on a rapid decline here in this company.
Well, I've laughed more in the past 17 minutes than I have all day. So I think this is great.
Oh, great.
Okay, I'll take that.
I'll take that. Okay. These clowns are now just wiggling and happy. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's a beautiful origin story for your company and for your mission.
And that it's so deeply aligned with your passion. I think it's so rare and so lucky when people get to have their profession and the thing that they care about most. Mm-hmm. You know, that have that middle Venn diagram of those things really work out for them. So lucky you, and then lucky everybody who gets to benefit from the work that you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I always say if I can avoid one woman from sitting on her bathroom floor sobbing, not knowing what's going on with her body, then we've hit the jackpot.
You know, I'm also a men's rights advocate in my downtime. So I also just want to say that this is I think a symptom of our medical industry as well, right? That there are plenty of men who are sick who don't have the data. There is that our system, you know, you leave a hospital and you get a bill and you don't know what that bill is for because you don't understand the tests that were done to you. You don't have that relationship with your doctor. Doctors are often overworked and very busy. And
see
so like
a billion patients a day. Yep.
Yes. And so there's just so much systemically that doesn't work for our health. So having people like you in your organization that are making people feel seen and heard is one, incredibly rare, and two, so valuable.
Well, thanks for saying that. It's I say this often, that like the incentives of our country just aren't aligned, right? The patient, the provider, and the payer, they all have very different goals. And until they see eye to eye, we're never going to see improvement in our healthcare system.
And sometimes it feels like the only one that has the goal of making sure the patient is fully healthy is the patient, and the rest of them have other ulterior motives, basically.
That's absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah. And how heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough. I mean, it's tough to square the circle in a capitalist system. That's challenging. That is our challenge. That is our great challenge of this, I think, next sort of phase of humanity, really.
Well, if I could flip the tone of this discussion and then we can put a pin in it. I think that this generation is the most vocal that this country has seen, and we are going to elicit change. It's not just elicit, we're going to demand it. And so it's an incredibly exciting time to be like running a company like UVA and being part of the solution, because I think that we are actually setting this country up for success by making data accessible, by making looping in the clinician and the patient into one conversation, making sure that everyone is kind of aligned on next steps and not just dictating what's going on. It's a conversation.
Right.
And so I'm hoping that it can only go up from here. So that's another good thing.
Okay. So that's great. That is a great way to put a pin in it. And, you know, I think, Amy, you've proven at least part of our hypothesis of why we're doing this, which is finding great people that if our child turned out to be like you, we would be pumped. So you have proven that for us. So let's get into the sort of meat and potatoes of our show, which is we also got the honor of being able to chat with your mom. We have a great sort of interview we're going to play a little like sort of newlywed style game with you. We're going to ask you the questions that we asked her and see if your answers align. And this is sort of about, you know, figuring out how you became you, how are you, turned into this incredible advocate for women's health. So the first thing we asked her, and we'll just let her start off, hear her voice here, is to just give us an overall picture and history of your family. So let's hear from your mom.
I came to this country in 1983, and it was a very dramatic wedding we had. Like within 2 weeks, he saw me, he proposed, and we got married and I got my visa, passports and everything done within 10 days after the marriage. And I was here within 3 weeks after the marriage, I was in USA. So we landed in New York City in Jackson Heights and stayed there for 2 years. And that's where Amy was born. So after 2 years, we moved to New Jersey. And that's where we started seeing the Indian community. I started working after my second daughter was born. I started working as a teller in the bank because we all are good in maths. So, you know, people coming from India, I think we have a strong background of maths.
Yeah. The reason why we include the bank teller part, because this is a crazy coincidence, and maybe not actually because your mom explains it, but my mom was also a bank teller. So I guess I never really put that together, you know, that like, oh yeah, that's like the Indian mom move. It can be part-time. Mm-hmm. You can still be like raising your kids and stuff like that. And that it
involves like an international language, but it's also a way to learn the language. My cousin was a bank teller, actually. Yeah. I'm also an immigrant.
And triumvirate of bank tellers.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's just because math is international and then they're like the language exchange is like not incredibly challenging. Although I bet your parents seem to have a better grasp of English language than my family did when we came here.
Well, both my parents went to English medium schools, so they've been speaking English since they were little. But I think it has to do with the universal language and then the basic skill set required they already have. So it's not like you're learning on the job. And I think that gives them the confidence. If it's a first job, like you need to be able to walk in and own the place to an extent. And do it, right?
Well, I think the other thing, and we talked a little bit about this with your mom, is that my mom is a very social creature by nature. And you also get that experience where you get to sort of like interact and interface with the town. I remember visibly, like as a kid, walking into the bank and seeing that, this is back in the day before they separated. They used to separate the bank lines. So each teller had their own line. And my mom's line was like literally out the door and everyone else's line was like two or three people. And like everyone wanted to hang out with me and Wendy. Like it's really cute. And your mom said she had like a similar experience. So
yeah,
I love that.
It's funny that you say that because like I remember, and I'm little, right? Like I'm like 5 or 6 year old. I thought my mom knew every Indian person that we passed by because they seemed to know her. So when she didn't say hi, I would be like, that was mean. Why didn't you say hi to her?
It's like, I didn't know her. We're on a bus.
You look down. Are you fighting? Like I built up this whole story in my head about why you didn't say hi to somebody.
That's cool.
Okay. So we asked your mom, and I'm curious what you think she said here. What would she say is her proudest moment when it comes to you as a child?
Oh, as a child. There's one story that she always brings up. And she even told my son this yesterday when I painted a backdrop for a show that I was hosting. I was in charge of this program called International Colors. And the whole purpose of the show was to bring multiple cultures together and showcase them, right? To show us that we're all from different parts of the world, but we all come together and make one world, right? That's kind of the tagline of the entire thing. And I had in my head that I want the backdrop to be the world, but the stage is huge. And so I tell my mom like one night at like 7 p.m., like, mommy, I need fabric and to make a backdrop. And she's like, what do you mean? And so I'm like, well, I have to paint the world. I told her this thing. She drives me to Joann Fabrics, this like local fabric store. And when I'm giving the dimensions to the woman, my mom's like, are you insane? And I'm like, no, I need you to stitch this and we get back home too. Cause I didn't know how to work a sewing machine. So she stayed up all night and she stitched this entire like sheets of fabric into this huge backdrop that literally went from like end to end floor to ceiling of the stage. And I then spent the next 2 weeks painting the entire world map on there. And so she didn't see it until she came to the show and the curtain opened and she sees the backdrop. And what she says is she just broke out crying there because she's like, my daughter's insane.
She was so disappointed in you. She's like, my daughter is a lunatic. No, but I can only imagine she put in a little bit of work and didn't know what you were capable of doing on your own.
Well, the entire night she was stitching, I was hearing a lot of words I didn't really know the meanings of.
And how old were you? Do you remember?
I was, I want to say freshman or sophomore year of, or maybe junior year of high school.
Okay. All right. Let's see what your mom had to say.
She created a project for the school. It was supposed to be a very simple project. where they put that black lady in the bus in the back. Rosa Parks, yes.
Oh my God.
So she had that project to work on it. And she just pulled our dining table chairs and she made a bus out of that. You know, just pretended, and she called a couple of her friends and they all together created this project. I think when she was probably in third, fourth grade, like how she came up with that idea. Story, okay, she read story or she might have heard it at the school, but just quickly pulling the chairs and holding a stick and somebody wearing the glasses and becoming like an old lady. And she just made that scene as so real.
So a different project, the Rosa Parks project, is really what resonated or stuck with your mom.
Yeah.
Are you surprised to hear that as the answer?
Yeah, I totally forgot about this. And I remember those old chairs because I used to be like, now thinking back, those are like so 80s.
You know what's funny is that she actually went on in that part of the question to bring up the thing that you were talking about. So she did mention that. I'm not going to give you the gold star because that's not what she mentioned first. So you don't get the point, but that's okay. But it actually leads me to a question about sort of achievement and overachievement, maybe because we were actually talking about this in the pre-show. About sending our kids off to school now. I just sent my kid off to his first day at school. And I wonder how much, you know, it was kind of an awesome moment, but also like, I don't want him to have the same nose to the grindstone, sort of being motivated by extrinsic factors or things that are like grades. And like, I was a total grade, like, you know,
junkie.
What's the word? Junkie. Yeah. Like, if I got a 96 and I should have gotten a 98, I would fight for the 2 points, kind of a kid. And I'm wondering, like, it seems like you had quite the overachiever's mentality. Reflecting on that now, do you feel like that was of benefit? Do you feel like that was a detriment? How are you thinking about that in terms of your own kiddo going into school?
I mean, that's a really loaded question. And so, like,
yeah,
I'll unload. I'll take it one step farther, where like if I got 100 on a test, I'd come home and show my parents and be like, well, why didn't you get 105?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So yeah. Like, why didn't you get
the extra credit question at the end? Yeah.
And like, is there one? No, but it's fine.
It's why don't you invent an extra credit question and then get $5? Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want, like, I think like with these projects that we just talked about, it wasn't necessarily about being overachieving. I'm very creative. And any opportunity I get to be creative, I want to jump at it because I feel like that's my comfort zone. And I get to shine in those moments, not to be an overachiever, but because I have the most fun when I'm doing that, right? Now with my son, what's also a big trait of me and unfortunately my husband is we're both very type A. We're both huge perfectionists. And I'm seeing my son having those tendencies too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having to backtrack this. Like, it's okay if the T is not fully straight. It's okay if it's a little crooked. It's still a T. And so he's really struggling with some of the things that I saw myself struggling with at an older age. Like, he has a really strong affinity for tennis, and he's already advancing more so than kids his age are. But now he's like, well, how do I get to the next level? I'm like, enjoy this right now. We don't need to be the youngest in the highest level. And so we're trying to bring fun back into everything. And I think we're consciously doing that.
Ooh, I love that. I'm giving you the gold star for that. That's what I'm giving you the gold star for.
Well, I love that. I think, yes, you know, kids have their own intrinsic guides and motivations, and sometimes it is points and grades and and excelling and wanting to be like the older kids or wanting to be stronger or bigger or smarter or whatever their thing is that's guiding them. And I love that you can't always control it, but maybe you can also emphasize fun, enjoyment.
Yeah.
How do you teach being present a little bit?
Yeah, it's I think that's kind of it. Like you can't, I don't know if you can teach it, but you could influence it. And
yes.
So like I'm really adamant about being the one to take him to all of his after school programs, like picking him up from school every day and then taking him to wherever he has to go. That like 20 to 30 minutes that we have in the car is probably my most cherished time with him because I get the full download of the day. Right? Like he tells me everything. And it's so fun because you can sense like, where is he excited? Where did something like go the way that he didn't expect it to, how he problem solved. Like
it's never a question of how was your day. It's what was your favorite thing that happened today? Because I always want to elicit a conversation and not just get the good or fine.
Right.
It was good. It was okay.
Yeah, because I always default to sort of like, because it's an overwhelming question.
What's a challenge that you faced while growing up that you think your mom noticed and would remember and answer now?
I'm guessing she'd talk about my gluten allergy and food.
Okay.
Do you want me to say more about that? Or?
Let's hear what she said.
Let's hear the clip.
When she was born, unfortunately, she was born with gluten-free allergy. Mm. And being Indian, roti, that's as kind of base in our meal. And every time I used to feed her that, she used to get very severe rashes and choking as if she's going to die. Ooh. I had to run to emergencies. I mean, very difficult time. She had no much choice of food. The biggest challenge was like all our friends had almost same age kids. When she goes to the birthday parties, cake is the main thing. Every kid is excited, waiting to get cut the cake and have a piece of cake. She cannot have the cake. She cannot have the pizza. She used to be quiet and she used to say, no, I don't want, I'm not hungry. But other kids know. So they make fun. So those were very hurting, but I feel proud that somehow she passed through those days.
Yeah. So this is like the thing that just occurred to me really. It's not just, I mean, the allergy I'm sure was super challenging, but then also Indian moms in general, like love language is feeding you, right? Like that is like, so you're really kind of, and then like feeding you, especially like what they know, like that is how they pass on culture in so many ways. Like the roti, like not being able to give a roti is a really, it's kind of funny to say out loud, but it's like huge. I mean, that is like, I feel like my mom right now with every grandkid, the way she connects with them is like, Baz rotis are the thing that they will always eat and love so
what
much.
Is
and
that?
You can just see.
It's like
it's basically
a
like a tortilla.
It's like a tortilla, okay. But it's made out of gluten, like wheat flour.
It's made out of gluten. No, it's made out of just straight gluten.
Just straight gluten.
It really is. It really is. But like it's delicious and like, but you can just see like that's the way, it's such a connective thing. So I guess, can you speak to that that aspect of the challenge?
Yeah, I mean that. There were so many social aspects to it, right? Like my mom would take a roti and like break it up into my rice dish because she knew I could eat rice and I would eat that happily. But then she would sit with me for hours. Like we would read chapter books. She taught me multiplication and algebra when I was like 3 years old because we were sitting at the table for like 6 hours at a time for each meal trying to eat this thing. And then after I would eat, I would get sick. So she's like, I just killed myself for half a day and she's sick anyway. So it was really, really hard. But I guess another aspect to it is it affected my life in a lot of ways too, because I wasn't able to be in the kitchen. My mom was cooking. So growing up, I never saw how certain dishes were created. And because I didn't eat everything, I don't even know how certain dishes taste. So eating like some of these like Indian foods, I'm learning those flavors now as an adult.
Wow.
I didn't grow up with them, right? So it impacts a lot of things.
So there's like elements of exclusion, like layers of it, of like not being in the kitchen, not being next door, and then also at parties, feeling like you weren't a part of the celebration in the same way other kids were allowed to be. And now everybody has a gluten allergy.
I know.
Now it's very cool and hip in LA to have a gluten allergy.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I kind of want one. I'm so upset.
That was the best thing that could have happened for my life, for gluten-free to become a fad diet. Because now all of a sudden, seriously, because I had options. Like
so many options, so many wonderful alternatives.
Like the gluten-free bread that I used to get when I was like younger, I'd spend so much time making the perfect sandwich. And then I'd sit down to eat it, I'd pick it up and it would just crumble. So I'd be eating like cereal. I'd have to eat my sandwich with a spoon. And it was disgusting. Like, it's not appetizing at all, right? But I think one of the most, like, touching moments for our family was in 2009. My husband and I were dating, and he came to my house for my birthday, and he picked up a cake from a gluten-free bakery in New York on his way to my house. And I cut the cake and my mom came over to feed me and she is bawling, crying. Mm. And she's like, this is the first birthday cake I've been able to feed you.
Oh. Wow.
And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And then the party was over because you were just a big mess of tears.
Yeah. I mean, just like it, you're right. Like I think about it in terms of vegetarianism because I grew up vegetarian. I'm no longer vegetarian, but I grew up that way and I felt like there was zero options for me. But now it's like I walk into a Burger King and there's an Impossible Burger option. You're just like, wait, what? It's such an inclusive feeling to have something on the menu that really like is like for you and is like, you know, really considering you.
Yeah.
That's huge. Really huge.
So Amy, you're obviously an overachiever in many ways. What was a moment that your mom knew that you would be successful in your life? What's the earliest moment that your mom was like, she's got what it takes?
I feel like she would say something from like when I was like 3 or 4 and I grasped every single thing that she was teaching me. Like, like I said, she mentioned that, or she tells me that I was doing algebra at such a young age, but it was literally like 3 + heart = 5, what goes in the heart.
Should we see if she said algebra?
I doubt she said that, but you can see that.
Well, she was always a very good student. I definitely was sure that she will be successful and she won't be a failure, but I never thought that she'll have her own company and she'll be running and meeting with the people, like all these big shots. I don't even know their names. I had no doubt about her success, that she would be working for some company and doing something, because my goal under my umbrella, I wanted both my girls to do at least master's, PhD, MBA. When kids do, they don't get married.
And her priority is grandchildren.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a big fear. So that's the reason I had that face, is like, I don't think she really answered the question though, like in terms of the earliest memory, but it sounds like the memory that's, or that the moment that's really sticking out to her really though, is you being the master of your own domain here, you being the CEO of your own company, something she did not see coming.
I didn't see that coming either.
Yeah. Okay. So great. Talk about that. Like, so you never saw that coming. This is.
Can I ask this question kind of framed in like a parenting mindset, where I'm wondering, was there something you had in you innately or was taught to you that helped you become a leader?
I think I'm very compassionate and, I'm only saying this because it's very hard for me to say stuff about myself in a positive way. It's just something that I think I'm still working through. But when I went to Hungary to meet with my engineering team a little while ago, my head of engineering says to me, because I was like, I'm meeting some of these guys for the first time and they're amazing. I feel like I've known them for years and they've been working for me for years. Yes. But I was meeting a lot of them for the first time. And he's like, well, Amy, it's because you prioritize people more than talent. Talent you can find anywhere, but people, it takes, you need to find that like special characteristic in the person, and that's who you hire. And you believe they can get the job done. I was like, yeah, that's true. And so like looking back now, it's like every single person that we have hired in this company is so passionate about what they're building. And we've literally kind of curated our own family here. And I do believe that's from what I've been kind of surrounded by growing up, because my dad always used to say to me, I know this is about my mom. My mom always.
It can also be about your dad. Like,
yeah.
There you don't maybe, have to. You know, one of the things that Sandeep and I have really come to in making this podcast is like, not everything is your mom. Not even everything is your family. Like a lot of the defining qualities that make us people that we're proud of is like, a 12-year-old we met that we wanted to be more like. So, so it could be anything, but yes, I'm, you know, in terms of like now having our hand in raising people, what's something that defined your sense of leadership or your quality of leadership? And it sounds like, compassion and prioritizing people is really something that we could be instilling in kids now. You know, absolutely. Especially as we're talking about achievement, we are like, you know, talking to kids about like how good they are at tennis and what kind of grades they have. It's like, yes, but how do the people around you
see you,
work with you? And how do you make them feel? How do you feel around them?
How do you bring out the best in each other?
That's exactly right.
That's such a nice way to put it.
you also have goals that your company has to meet, right? Like you have these metrics or something like that, that you want to, you know, pursue in order to get, close your next round of funding and stuff like that. So how do you balance that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very like hand-offish way to say that, hand-wavy thing to say like, oh, the talent doesn't matter. There is a bar that they need to hit and they need to have the right things on their resume, right? Like if we're looking for somebody in operations, but they come from an entire like, sales background, like they're not the right fit for right. Our operations role. But when you're looking, like, let's assume they've checked the majority of the boxes, right? And now you have two candidates in front of you. One has an EQ that really kind of matches what you and like you can foresee yourself enjoying a conversation with this person day in, day out. I might not actually talk to them every single day, but I wouldn't want to dread getting on the phone with this person.
Yeah.
It's like a super lightweight bar that I set for myself to start right. with. And somebody else who like really checks off all the boxes, but I would feel like it would be a chore to talk to this person day in, day out. Like I wouldn't prioritize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't prioritize. I would definitely move on with candidate number one.
Right.
And there's just like, we're a very mission driven company, and the types of customers that we deal with, they're all struggling with something, right? Mm. So you need to be able to be compassionate and understand the work that you're doing every day has a bigger purpose, even if you don't see it immediately.
Yeah. Right?
Like you're building a product. It's not like you add a feature and you see the value of that feature overnight. It takes some time. Mm. So you need to be patient and understand what you're solving for. And I don't think a mission-driven company is necessarily for everyone. So we kind of sift out that as well.
For sure. There have been companies that have claimed to be mission-driven and then actually quite insincere in that.
Or you kind of lose yourself in that. Like you started out mission-driven, but oh no, like the realities or whatever start to overwhelm you and you lose sight of the mission.
That's a great point, Sandeep. So like it starts from the top, right? And if you think about even like culture, right? As every generation comes, the culture kind of fizzles away. So when you're thinking about building out a team, if I'm like exuding what this company is about, I need to have that message continue as long as possible. So for every person that we hire, we want to ensure that they could also take the reins and like represent the company in the best way. And it's not a diluted message.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. So to get back on the parenting train and about your mom, it's clear that your mom did a good job. It's also kind of clear that you came out very special, right? And this nature and nurture thing is really like the constant question that we are not going to solve probably ever. But we asked your mom, what do you think makes a good parent? And so without trying to answer what she said, what do you think are the qualities that make a good parent?
Being able to listen to your child. And there's a difference. I say this to my son all the time. I'm like, do you hear me? And he'll say yes. I'm like, did you listen to what I said?
Yeah.
And then I get the no. Right. So there's a really big difference between hearing and listening. Mm-hmm. And so my son will say something, and I'm saying this like from the perspective of me being a parent. And I really try to make sure I'm listening for the underlying tones of what he's actually trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important, because what I ultimately want is to be his person for life, right? Of course, at some point he's going to find a partner and like have a best friend, like do all those things, but he should always feel comfortable to come back to me and not have to hide anything from me, because I have that relationship with my mom too. She can read me before I even say anything, or she just looks at me, she's like, what did you do wrong? And she probably knows what I did wrong too.
Yeah.
And so I want that relationship with my son. And I think it starts by being a really active and diligent listener.
Cool. Let's hear what your mom said.
Listen to your kids, understand where they're lacking, and try to. Many times kids are not so open, even though they are like a friend to you. But they are still afraid in their mind, like, can they share this with their parents or what they would think? We really have to be making them so comfortable that they should be able to share everything with you.
Yep. Okay. So you guys clearly talked about this beforehand.
Okay. Cheated. Yeah, both cheaters.
Obviously. Yeah. But we'll give you the gold star because we can't prove it.
You can look at my phone record.
But our trust is broken.
Not talked to me in weeks.
Yeah, that's right. You did say you guys didn't speak. So
I literally have to text her and be like, can we come over?
Yeah.
No. That was
maybe in separate rooms. yeah, I think that's huge. It's just being a safe space for you to be able to talk about anything around your kiddo seems to be. But does that translate to business too? Like, is that something you bring to? Just sounds like if empathy and compassion and like, you know, caring about them as people, as you, you know, rather than just employees, sounds like that's something that can, you know, be made manifest outside of the parental relationship and into your business. Is that true?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have, like I always say, like we're pretty much remote right now. And I'm like, we still have an open door policy, right? Like I am accessible in any way possible.
Open Zoom. You can just yeah, Zoom me at any time.
Exactly. Exactly. As long as my calendar allows it, that's the blocker. The important thing is that I want everyone to feel comfortable to have those hard conversations with me. Like being a woman that was previously in the workforce, like I know how hard it is to have the tough conversations with your manager and your boss, and it shouldn't be that way. Like yeah, if you believe something for yourself, like you should be able to go in and advocate for yourself. And I'm trying to nurture an environment where people can do that. I'm seeing that people are. So, yeah. While the answer might not always be what they're hoping for whatever yeah, reason, we come up with a plan, and there's so much transparency in our entire process that I think that just drastically helps.
There is a parenting model from this woman named Dr. Becky that I really like, where she says one of the first steps.
We love us, the Dr. Becky.
We love us. One of the things that she says is like one of the first steps is just to like let your kid know that you believe them.
Yeah.
Is, you know, oh, you're flipping out about this thing. I believe you that that's hard for you.
I love that. And I feel like that, does that relate to your relationship to your patients, like and the customer base? Because like, I feel like part of the biggest hurdles is you gave me that diagnosis, but like, I just feel like that's wrong.
Yeah. Or I'm feeling this pain. So often a woman's pain is thought to be exaggerated.
Oh, yeah.
And to just say like, I believe you when you say that your pain is a 10, that's not normal. Let's treat it in this other way. Let's give it the extra attention. And probably so true with people that you work with. Oh, you are sick today, or you feel mistreated or undervalued in this way. I believe you first.
Right.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I've seen in parenting that is really frustrating to me is the assumption that our kids are manipulative.
Oh, yeah.
Like they have the ability to do that in some way. And
right,
that always really like
you're
hurts
not
me.
Hurt.
Yeah, you're not really okay. Hurt. You're not really sad. This isn't really hard for you.
Yeah.
Or even when they're like really little, they're crying because they want attention. Yes, they need love. They need comfort. These yeah, are needs that they're expressing. They don't know that there's a way to like trick anything. And so I love just the very basic of idea of like, are you listening? Are you making yourself a safe place for your children to respond to? Because if you're not also listening to them, then why would they keep coming to you?
Well, I think that's so interesting because I think, and this translates across, right? Like this is, I'll give you one anecdote and then I'll explain to you how that's actually relevant. So there was, my son was maybe 3 years old and he was having a meltdown. He's about to make an appearance. So he's having a complete meltdown about wearing his Spider-Man pajamas. And you're wearing your Spider-Man pajamas. And this, like, he's like, no, I want to wear the Spider-Man pajamas. Like, but you're wearing them. And so my husband is sitting downstairs hearing on the monitor us arguing about this thing. He comes up and he's like, what's the problem? And my son's like, I want to wear my Spider-Man pajamas. And he goes, you are. I'm like, okay, you take over now. And so this went on for like two rounds with my husband, and my husband lost it. And so I come back and I'm like, are you sad? And he's like, yes. And so then I start uncovering what the actual problem was. It had nothing to do with Spider-Man pajamas.
Yes.
It had to do with some kid that pushed him or something that happened that day. And then we were able to kind of dissect what that actually was. But he had no idea at three how to emote that and how to verbalize.
How is your husband? Wait, hold on. I gotta ask, like, how's your husband taking, like, is he starting to see the light here? Because this is really hard for me. We were not raised this way, but to go to the emotional reality first, like try to access that first, as opposed to the logic reality of what's happening, has been so challenging, but I think I'm finally getting there. I'm finally getting to second nature. And this is after 5 years of being a dad. So curious where your guys' journey is in that.
How old is your child?
He's five.
Okay. So my son is 6 and it's funny because now my husband's second question is, are you sad? And I'm like, you can't bark that question at him. You have to like, actually ask him that question.
Yeah, that doesn't count. You actually That's like, are you sad?
So oh my he's gosh, getting amazing. There. He's getting the right words.
Are you sad now? Right. How about now?
Yeah. So we got to work on the tone, but he is asking the right questions. But I think it just takes, you're right. We're not raised that way. And to ask those types of questions, like the initial reaction is like, suck it up. It's not a big deal. But like, he doesn't know, he knows it's not okay to get pushed, but he didn't know how to handle it in the moment. And so he bottled it all up and it came out to his safe person, which was me when I prompted it. Because it didn't come out during the whole download or anything throughout the day. But I think that's also relevant with our customers, because a lot of customers, when you're talking about women that are going through infertility or struggling through perimenopause symptoms, oftentimes the tone of their emails and their messages, while well-intentioned, can come off very harsh. But once you uncover like what the actual problem is, like I love every single one of our customers because they're amazing. But you really have to understand what the pain point is so you can solve it versus just reacting to the anger or the negativity.
Yeah, I find that to be true in every conversation. I once with a boyfriend got in a fight about me wanting to buy a ukulele and him thinking that it was too expensive. And
a ukulele can never be too expensive.
Got into it. And I told my therapist, and my therapist was like, well, I think it's fair to say that if you're getting in a fight about a ukulele, it's not about the ukulele. In fact, if I could write a couple's book, it would be, it's not about the ukulele. And it's so true. It's like, it's not about the Spider-Man PJs. It's not about the macaroni and cheese. It's about the emotional truth. Okay. Let's move on to our next question. We asked your mom, what's something about her childhood that she never told you about? And of course, there's no way for you to actually know this answer, but is there something about her childhood that you've always wanted to know?
I know my mom's childhood was very different from mine because girls and their family weren't allowed to go to school. They were, like her grandfather was very strict about the fact that women's jobs were, or role was to be in the house, take care of the house, take care of the kids. Education wasn't needed. And I know she used to sneak out because her dad actually wanted them to go to school. So she would sneak out from the house with her sisters and they would go to school and then sneak back in. So I'd be really curious, knowing how my mom is right now, where she's like so risk averse, like doesn't take a chance, won't step out of line in any way, how she actually got through that and survived that whole ordeal.
Okay, let's hear what she said.
I belong to a very orthodox family. And my grandpa, he stopped me to go to school after second grade. Because he thought like education was not important at all. And even though we had so many servants, we didn't have to cook, we didn't have to clean, we didn't have to do anything. But that was just the, like nobody studied. We were the first ones who graduated actually from my whole, we have a huge joint family. So my parents kind of, we said, you know, it was very boring to be at home. And then we talked and my parents went to my grandpa. And told him that, hey, you know, they have to be in school now. Time has changed. So they was just concerned of getting her married into a good family. So education, if you're giving, it was not to work. It was just for the purpose that they'll find a good boy and they'll go to a good family.
Wow. Okay. So we asked your mom what's something she never told you. And you're like, oh, do you mean this thing that she never told me?
I knew that she didn't go to school. I'm curious about how she actually did it.
Yes. Yes. Well, I hope you guys have that conversation afterwards because it is really interesting how she was counterculture in that way. Very cool. Very, very rock and roll.
I mean, just imagine that whole process of like being discouraged from going to educate yourself to, okay, times have changed, educate yourself. But do it not to get into Harvard, MIT, whatever, to get Rajesh or Ramesh or Mahesh. to then you're now coming to America, learning to be a bank teller, having kids of your own, wanting them to go to school. Of course they want you to overachieve. It's like it was such a rare thing for them, or like it was such a novel concept.
I just think it's so out of character for her to like go against the grain that heavily. One thing that like both my parents have always prioritized is education, because they said to me, like, money, property, like things can always be taken away, but your education can't be ever taken away from you.
Yeah.
So it's one asset you can always hold. And so with that in mind, I've kind of just justified, like, that's why she went to school. But
yes, for like, a sense of security. Just,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. So now we're kind of going to ask the reverse question, which is, what's one thing your mom has always wanted to ask you but hasn't had a chance yet?
Oh, geez. I feel like she'd want to know how many boyfriends I had in school.
How many? Okay.
Or if I had a boyfriend in school.
Okay, let's hear what she said.
I hope everything in her life, family life is going well. She is happy. I mean, is she happy?
Is she happy?
Is she happy?
Are you happy?
I'm happy. Look at this little guy I have with me. Of course I'm happy.
Yeah.
It's a pretty awesome life that I think I've cultivated, and I wouldn't change anything.
Let's just take a breath with that. Mm. What a beautiful thing to say and feel.
It's just interesting. Sorry, I didn't take the breath.
Take a breath. Take a breath right now. I swear to God, if you don't take a breath, I'm going to kill you.
If you don't meditate and be in the moment right now, I swear to God, I'm going to.
Are you sad?
Well, can we for a second talk about, remember, the question was, what's one thing you've always wanted to ask her but haven't had the chance to yet? And it's, are you happy?
Well, because so much of what our parents design for us is they say, I just want them to be happy. Just be happy and healthy. You know?
I'm going to just say, be happy. Like, as if it's a command. Be happy. Be happy about it.
I do think part of it is a choice. Like, you can, arrange your thoughts, or you can do things to prioritize happiness
That's
more than others.
Me right now.
But okay, it's fine. I know. It triggers a lot of people. I'm just saying that sometimes when I'm in a lull, I think there are things I can do to feel
change
happier. And then there are things that I can do to continue being in my lull. Whatever. This is just me. This is my own
you.
My
this
own
is not
brain
your
manipulation.
Mom is a podcast. It's my Amy's. No. I hear that. Amy, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
There's like easy days, there's really good days. And it like happiness to me is like a state of mind, right? If you're able to go to bed and be like, okay, like everyone's healthy overall, like things are good today. Like you didn't burn the house down. The bar doesn't need to be that high, right? To
say yes, the bar does not need to be that high.
Everything is very good. Yeah.
I keep a nice low bar. Yeah, that's what the overachiever doctor CEO just said.
Exactly.
Just keep a nice low bar. Don't expect too much out of your
But you have to get there. You have to get there. You have to get there and be like, oh yeah, I didn't have to get 105 for today.
Yeah,
to be a success.
Exactly. Like I'm not saying like, yes, there's obviously accomplishments in life, but that doesn't define you, right? Or it shouldn't define you. Like, I can't get a PhD every day. I can't, I can't do, like, if I set the bar up too high, I will be in a state of depression because nothing will ever be good enough, right?
Yeah, your expectations are your worst enemy. Yep.
Exactly. So if you set a reasonable bar, then all of a sudden, like, life looks pretty great.
So on that, because you talked about, and I think we can end this here and then go to the lightning round, but kind of bringing it to your mission and your company a little bit, because that's really fascinating to me is, you talked about the bar being, if we can just prevent one woman from sobbing on the floor, without answers. And how is that going? Where are you at? What's next for you? I'm kind of curious about the state and of achieving the goals for your company.
It's a huge, we're on a marathon journey right now. And so the bar that we had to surpass was that blinking smiley face, right? Giving a woman a yes or no answer. So that was the first milestone we had to hit. Can we build something that will give women substantially more data than a yes or no? Where she's sitting on the floor looking at a pregnancy test with a magnifying glass. Can we create something that's a lot more meaningful? And so we did that. But now the big win for us, there's two things. Can we scale this technology to address every phase of a woman's life? Because it's not just about fertility or perimenopause. It addresses every single transition that women go through. So we want to scale our tech there. And then the second big thing is, as I said, like the bar we started with was, can we be better than a yes or no? Well, great. Mm-hmm. Yes or no was here. It was above that. But we want to maintain that level above so that any company that comes after us has to do better. Because now we're actually creating innovation in women's health.
I love that.
Hell yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the lightning round. We've used up enough of your very precious multitasking time. So we have a few questions for you here. Sandeep, how are we doing on points before we go into the lightning round? While you're calculating, I'm going to just run through how this works. They're going to be short questions, short answers. We're going to play back what your mom said. Every time you get one right, you get 2 points. The points are completely insignificant, and we just do it because Sandeep loves games. That's the only reason. But you are both people who love getting high scores, so maybe it'll matter to you too.
Yeah, also, I'm admittedly undiagnosed ADHD, so I believe you have 4 gold stars right now, but I can't say whether that's true or not.
And also, some of those answers were freakishly on point.
Yeah.
And we went on many segues, so we actually didn't even ask you as many questions as we have because we went off on so many different tangents that were all beautiful. And so, again, thank you for your time. We're going to jump into the lightning round.
Here we go. Four gold stars. The points are doubled. The first question we asked was 3 adjectives that you'd use to describe Amy. What do you think your mom said? You get a gold star for each.
Smart, driven, creative.
Hardworking, courageous, challenging.
She's amazing. We love her. She's a handful.
She's a lot. I speak Indian mom, and I think what she meant by challenging was like that she challenges people, that she like confronts people, right? Am I right?
Yes.
Okay, I know. Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right, number 2.
But I like your option more, or your read on it a lot more.
So you get no gold stars, but great, here we go.
Okay, we asked her if Amy could have a conversation with anybody in history, who would she choose? Who would you choose?
I would want to talk to Steve Jobs.
Probably me or her dad.
I love parents.
I love my aunties. That answer.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Well, couldn't be anybody more important.
Yeah. Who else? She talks to me every day. But
she can talk to anybody in the world. It's probably me.
Because she knew I wasn't going to be talking to her for the next few weeks.
That's true. Amazing. All right. What is the best gift your child has ever given you? So we asked her that about you. What's the best gift you've ever given to your mom?
Best gift? Oh, my grandson. Or like her grandson.
Massager.
Which, you know, if your grandson gets good at a back rub, then maybe that's
then
two
we'll
for
be
one.
Neck and neck. Then you'll finally be tied with the Brookstone massager you gave her.
I'm doing great on this lightning round.
Okay. As a child, what was your favorite book?
Oh my God, it was either Thoroughbred series or Pippi Longstocking.
She used to read Harry Potter.
That was not a kid then.
Listen, our sense
You're
of time.
You're forever a
for
child in your mother's
yeah,
eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
That is true. I did have my son sign a contract that he will always be my baby.
Oh right. My and, God.
Last
that
one.
Is so cute and funny and weird. On his wedding day, that don't forget, he'll always be. I have it in writing.
I do have it in writing from when he was like a few months old that he signed. And it also says that he will always hold my hand.
Oh my God. Aww. I love that. That's legally binding.
Really it's legally binding. Cutest legally binding contract ever. All right. last one. What is your favorite subject in school?
Math.
Biology.
I was like, come on, I wanted to give you one.
Are we sure we're playing the tapes of Amy's mom? This is not somebody else's mom.
No, it's not my mom. Yeah, it's definitely Amy's mom.
No, I like bio too. I was a good student.
It's fine. You ended up with 4 gold stars. And remember, what did we learn this whole episode? It's not about the points. It's not about getting 105.
It's not about getting 105.
Yeah, you're okay. It's great. It's about the process.
How has this been for you, like hearing your mom's perspective on you and your childhood and your child rearing?
I mean, it's kind of humbling to hear, right? Because we don't talk about that stuff on a day-to-day basis. And I think it's often... Like, I know people say like Mother's Day and birthdays are like Hallmark holidays, but it's actually a day to like reflect back on where you came from and why you are the way you are. And so I appreciate you guys kind of doing this in between those holidays because it is making me reflect on why I am the way I am. And it has a lot to do with my mom.
Hey, Amy, this is so great to meet you. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I was so excited to learn about UVA and everything you guys are doing. So best of luck to you. I hope you get your mom is a podcast bump and it's meaningful and that you help many women get their bump if they want to have a job.
Get it?
See what I did there? So thanks so much for joining us.
This has really been so special, Amy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great talking with both of you.
Your Mom is a podcast is hosted by Milana Weintraub and Sandeep Parikh. It is executive produced by Milana Weintraub, Sandeep Parikh, and Stephen Hine. Editing and sound design is by Sean Marr. Music by Matt Friedman. This podcast comes from F and Funny Productions and Story Mill Media. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram and TikTok at Your Mom is a Podcast.
Yeah, I don't know how you remember the Rosa Parks thing.
Oh, you don't remember
I
that?
I remember it now, but I thought you always talk about the store, like the world, the backdrop.
I told them that too.
Yeah, but they ended up focusing on the Rosa Parks one, but wow. I totally forgot about that.
I remember that just stuck in my brain.
And then apparently I guessed a lot of the other questions right, like the school, the gluten allergy.
Mm-hmm.
There was another one that I think I got right too, but then the lightning round, I got every single question wrong.
So I don't know.
So you thought that any historical or current figure I could talk to and I'd pick you or Papa?
Yeah.